So this is a little different presentation. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, he encouraged the devotees to share their realizations, to preach Krishna consciousness in their own unique way. So he encouraged individualism. He didn't expect us all to be just like rubber stamp robots, where we just say the same thing over and over again and present the same things as it is, and that's it. We don't consider time, place, and circumstance. He wanted us to use our uniqueness, our individuality, to present Krishna consciousness in different ways to inspire people to take up Krishna consciousness, right? So, we all have to try, right? And I think I mentioned to you the last time I was here, I wrote a book. I used to play professional billiards, you know, pool, like this, right? So I used to teach pool in America, and I used to play in competitions. And I was thinking of Krishna while I was playing. And so I thought, well, let me engage that in Krishna's service. So I wrote a book called The Yoga of Pool, with the subtitle How to Become a champion in Billiards and in Life. Right? And so in that book, believe it or not, I'm actually bringing truths from the Bhagavad Gita. Because one of the unique things about sport at the highest level is that you have to learn to control the mind. The mind has to be your friend. You ask all the top sportsmen and they'll say yes. It's only when they got to the point of controlling their mind and being able to focus and harnessing that inner power that they actually were able to excel and beat the other people. So I talk about this in the book. I explain how we're not the body, we're not the mind. We need to learn to, you know, bring out our higher self, understand who we really are. So it was my humble attempt to present Krishna consciousness in that context. And it's actually a very popular book. It's gotten rave reviews, 5-star reviews from all the top teachers around the world. So another book I wrote, I'm actually going to re-release this, but it's called The Five Noble Truths and Affirming Your Brilliance, where I basically talk about the nature of us as souls. So this book is basically talking about how we are, in true nature, we are souls. Because you see so many books, self-help books, right? And they focus on the body or the mind. You know, you have to sharpen your mind and you have to think positive and you have to get your body physically fit and, you know, 100% at its max, you know, full potential. And so all of these things are all nice, but they don't address the real essence of who we are as a soul. And that was Prabhupada's whole objective in starting this Krishna consciousness movement, was to teach people that they're a soul. So he would say, we kick out all these nonsense religions, we kick out all these nonsense philosophers. In fact, he would even say, we kick them in the face. He was so adamant. He was very frustrated and angry at so many of these people misleading the public with bogus philosophies and materialistic philosophies. So he was like, we kick them in the face. You are a soul. We are spiritual beings. We are not this body. Where is the science of the soul, he would say? Where is the, you know, where is the university teaching about the soul? So that was his passion, his great his intention was to establish Krishna consciousness as the university of the soul, teaching people the real truth, removing all of these external truths. So I'm going to actually republish this as "You are a soul." Just very bold and straightforward. The five keys to understanding your greatness and conquering all fears. Right? This is something, saying something like that would, you know, appeal to people that would be interested. So the first truth, there are five truths we want to share here. The first truth is, I am powerful. The mistake is to think that when we talk about power, we think of muscles, right? Yes, I'm powerful. I have these muscly arms, these tissues. But no, the soul power that is within you, beyond measure, that's the very essence of your existence. And we're not talking about soul music. No, we're talking about this soul. The soul, the real essence of who you really are. The person within, the witness. Right? That's something that needs to be understood from the beginning, is that you have a powerful strength inside. So the potential is that we as spirit are equal in quality to the entire energetic ocean. We have the same energetic potential as everything else in the universe, qualitatively. We have the same quality. And Prabhupada gives the example of a drop of water in the ocean to the entire ocean. So the quality is the same. So similarly, we are qualitatively just like God. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Prabhupada says, that we are like little Krishnas. We're like little Krishnas. We're just tiny. That's the problem. Because we're so tiny, the material energy influences us and we become bewildered. But we're like little Krishnas. He even says the mother, the father, everyone is Krishna in a sense. Right? We're sparks of Krishna's splendor. We're coming from the same original source. We have been sold a lie. The corporations that govern the world have sold you, all of us, a lie. They have told you that you are not good enough, you are not attractive enough, you are not strong enough, you are not smart enough, you are not rich enough. And all of these things are simply so they can sell you products. Right? They sell you that new mascara, that new facial cream, that new testosterone booster. That's all it is. It's just for them to sell products. Their only motivation is to sell you products. Manage mind and karma. So the soul is ultimately control, is the ultimate, the soul is the ultimate controller of the mind-body complex. Right? We are the witness within. We are the driver of this body. We're not the body. Think carefully about the decisions you make today, because they're painting a picture of your future. What you are today is an accumulation of the decisions and actions you have made in the past. What we are now is a result of all of our past actions and our desires. We don't have anyone else to blame but ourselves. And if we're doing good, we can pat ourselves on the back that we did something, you know, right in the past to lead us to this position. So you want to align with your core. Saying namaste when greeting someone in India is to say, I honor the presence of God in your heart. That's what it means. When you put your hands together and you say namaste, you're literally saying, I honor you, the soul within. The Prabhupada actually gives a secret of success in this regard. He says that in order to not be influenced by the material energy or materialistic association when you're out on Sankirtan, when you're out mingling in the world, he says if you focus on the presence of the super soul within someone's heart, their association will not impact you. If you're focused on this, in the presence of the soul within the heart, within their body, then their negative influence cannot actually affect you. So this is how a devotee can stay transcendental in even the most materialistic circumstances. So this is practical namaste. The practical namaste, where we actually put this understanding into practice. Because it's one thing to say, oh, I honor the soul within you, I honor the presence of God within you. But how do we practically manifest it? So one way, the six obvious ways are, and this is explained in the Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, revealing our most intimate secrets, hearing in confidence and with an empathic heart, giving a gift for no other reason than gratitude, receiving a gift gracefully, giving blessed food with the pure intention to please, and accepting food that has been given with love. This is how we express namaste. That I honor you as a soul. I honor you. I honor that the presence of God within your heart. Purest love. A person who is truly conscious of their own spiritual nature and the divinity within all other living beings will naturally filter every experience through that paradigm. You can see this. Someone who actually understands this, fully embraces this truth, who embodies this truth, it's just so obvious in their actions, in their words, the way they behave in all circumstances. It's manifesting this truth. The soul is eternal. You never die, or rather you, the soul that currently animates this physical body, live on forever. Our destination after death, after the death of the material body, is determined by your karma and your desire. These are the two factors which determine what happens to you after death. What you do and what you deserve, or what you desire and what you deserve. You can desire so many things. Oh, next life I want to be, you know, Jeff Bezos, I want to be Elon Musk and have all the money and all the influence, right, or something like that. But if you don't deserve it, you won't get it. So desire is not the only factor. You have to desire and you have to deserve it as well. And of course, this is these same things, these same factors have determined our current situation now. What determines our path? Depending on the condition of the astral body, the soul will either reincarnate into a lower or higher birth in this physical world, or move beyond the limitations of the five gross elements by resonating at a higher frequency of consciousness. This is explained in the Bhagavatam. So depending on the state of your consciousness, your subtle body, you will attract certain material elements, which essentially means you will attract a certain form, physical form, right? So it's all about consciousness. It's all about retuning our consciousness. Right now, our consciousness is tuned in, the frequency is tuned into this physical frequency. So we think we're a physical body. Therefore, we think this is us. Because our consciousness, literally, is tuned into this frequency that makes up matter. But as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we change the frequency, like changing the channel on the radio station. And all of a sudden we start tuning into a higher frequency. Our vibration changes. We start to align ourselves, our consciousness, with that I'm a soul. I'm eternal. This is what it's all about. This is the purpose of Krishna consciousness. The chanting that we do every day, the prasadam, reading the books, it's changing the consciousness, changing the frequency, right? In the radio station in our heart. So that we actually become convinced and focused and connected on the highest frequency, which is soul. Renunciation. Look at that cute baby. We incarnate into this physical world naked and bereft of any possessions. Whatever we accumulate during our lifetime may be temporarily in our care. So we come into this world empty, completely naked, nothing. And we will leave with nothing physical. All we take with us is our consciousness. That's all we take. Look at this baby. She's a beautiful baby, innocent. It's a clean slate. Nothing is there. And as it goes through life, he, she goes through life, it takes on various energies, influences, attachments, and then you have material bondage. But we come into this world completely empty. So true renunciation is when we engage all of our energies in the service of the energetic source. One is able to achieve liberation from mundane attachment. So Prabhupada explained like this. He says, look, you don't own anything. Only Krishna is the true owner of things. So an intelligent person engages those things in the service of the Lord, the true owner of those things. So when we talk about renunciation, first you have to understand that we technically have nothing to renounce because we don't own anything. Right? Nothing. We cannot keep anything when we leave this body. So therefore, true renunciation is when you engage all of your skills, all your material possessions in the service of the Lord. This is honest, true renunciation. So of the first truth, this is the affirmation. I am a soul with unlimited potential. And I want you to repeat this after me. I am a soul with unlimited potential. I am aligned with my core essence. I am eternal and transcendental to this material energy. I am powerful. Very powerful. So this image here is actually a yantra. So it is taking this mantra, this affirmation, I am powerful, and it's mapped to a magic square of the sun mathematically. So I'll explain this later on, but this is essentially how yantras are created. They take the, and the same thing in the magic traditions, the mystical traditions, the things called sigils, where you have a funny looking shape, but it is actually a representative of the deity. They take the name of God, they convert it to numbers, then they map those numbers on a magic square, and you end up with a funny looking shape, and that is considered to be another form of that deity, that angel. So this is using the same technology, essentially, mapping it to a magic square of the sun. So this literally is, I am powerful in geometric form. Right? That's its geometric shape, according to mathematics. Truth number two, I am protected. Yes. So I am powerful, and I am protected. There has never been a time when the Lord turned away from us. When we turned away from the illuminating sun within, the super soul, we created the shadow of illusion and feelings of separateness, right? When you turn your back to the sun, what happens? You create a shadow. The shadow is dependent on the sun. There's no shadows without a sun. So we create these shadows. We create this illusion of separateness. That's us, not Krishna. We've turned our back on God. God's always there. And so the most intimate manifestation of God is God in the heart, known as Param Atma, Supreme Soul, Super Soul. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the example that there are two birds in the tree, and one bird is eating fruit, and the other bird is just watching and waiting for that other bird to notice his friend watching. And unfortunately, the bird is so busy eating fruit, he doesn't notice his friend. Peace of mind. So peace of mind comes from purity of the heart. The more we align ourselves with the childlike influences, innocence, and purity of the soul, it's very hard to read on the side here, the more we will rid ourselves of anxiety, fear, and insecurity. So children are very innocent and very pure by nature. Who has children here? Most people, right? Many people. So we experience this practically, right? Children are just very pure, innocent souls. And you can learn a lot from children in their innocence. And so as parents, we have such a grave responsibility to protect their innocence, to not exploit their innocence, and to feed them positivity and encouragement and purity and mercy and all of these wonderful qualities, because they literally have a blank slate. They're clean, and it's now our responsibility to fill that slate as teachers, as gurus, as parents. Interdependence. Throughout your life, you have been serving. All things, from insects to plants, aquatics, are alive with purpose, and the purpose of life is service to others. We need each other for success and happiness. This is the nature of life. Life is linkage. We're all connected. We're all dependent on each other, interdependent. We cannot succeed without the other person. Every living being, down to the amoeba, the single cell organism, all of them have a service. There's bacteria right now in your stomach. Most people on average have about 3 pounds of bacteria in their stomach. And these bacteria are serving you. Without the presence of this bacteria, you'd be dead. You actually need them. So you are the host soul. Your body literally is made up of billions of souls right now. You're just a walking factory of souls, like a huge apartment complex of souls on 2 feet, walking around. You just happen to be the landlord. Have you thought about that before? You're just the landlord. You're just the host soul right now. But there are so many souls right now serving you that you have no knowledge of, not even aware of. There's even bugs inside your eyes cleaning your eyeballs. And if they didn't, your eyes would be dirty all the time. Right? See, interdependence is truth. We're interdependent beings. Not independent, interdependent. Synergy and harmony. The endless seeking of harmony between the yin and yang energies that enables the universe to prosper and evolve. We are in fact a microcosm of the macrocosm. And so as the body naturally reacts to a lack of oxygen by convulsing, the universe would react violently to the absence of you. Have you thought about that? You are critical. You are essential to the health of this universe. Every one of us is a critical component in the makeup of this universe. We are never alone. Every day you have to make the effort to, what is it? Refocus your consciousness on the higher frequency of spirit and cleanse the mind of the hankering and limitations pertaining to the body. This is why we do japa in the morning. Meditation. Because we have to refocus our consciousness. Because throughout the day, we're constantly getting bombarded with nonsense. With false propositions. With illusions. So when we stop to meditate, we refocus. We reset the consciousness. We retune it. Okay. No more nonsense. Let's return. No more Facebook. Refocus the consciousness on who we are as a soul and what our purpose in life is. Seeing the truth. When we start seeing each and every human, animal, insect, and plant as a soul expressing itself through a body, we connect with the world at the deepest level. This is the key. And this is what is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. The wise, humble sage sees with equal vision. Right? An elephant, a dog, a cow, So with equal vision comes wisdom, true wisdom. Affirmation. I now release all fear and anxiety. Repeat. Love embraces me every minute of every day. And I'm safe from all harm. I feel totally secure. You feel it? I am protected. So that is the geometric signature of the phrase of the affirmation, I am protected. So truth number three, I am perfect. One thing is absolutely true. There will never be anyone exactly like you. We are all unique individuals. When we were born, the mold was broken. There'll never ever be someone else like you again. You're unique. And that's something really beautiful. You're very unique. There's no one like you. You're just special, right? Something increases in value in this world when it is rare, right? Something that's rare, it becomes valuable. The rarer it is. So you are the most rare. So imagine how much value you are. Right? So there's a mold that's broken. We are who we wish to be. So when we come into this world, we take on a persona. We are who we wish to be, and hence the show goes on. The stage of each life is but the opportunity for each of us to play out our desired personas. So when you go to the theater, right? Broadway, the theater, what do people do? Traditionally, they would wear masks. They would put a mask on, right? This is what the word personality comes from, persona, like putting a mask. You're covering your true self. So in the same way, when we take birth, we take on these bodies, we're putting on a mask. It's not our true self. And we pretend to be something. We foolishly try to live out our foolish desires to be the Lord. And what's ironic about this is that, you know, we pretend to be someone at work, and then when we go home, we're someone else. And then when we hang out with our friends, we're someone else. We put on all these different masks depending on the situation we find ourselves in. We're constantly covering our true self. That's the nature of the mature world. So we have this opportunity. This is the blessing of the Lord, that he says, okay, you can pretend. I give you that ability to pretend. He's giving us this minute independence to pretend to be something we're not. That's God's mercy. So love your true self. To love yourself is to love God in all of creation. You are perfect in every way. When you look into the mirror, just remember that the real you is looking from behind those eyes. And see that little kitten, he's seeing the lion. There's a self-realized kitten right there. Right? He doesn't see the kitten, he sees the lion. So in the same way, we have to see the lion inside. Right? Don't think that this is us. This is our body. We are so powerful. Unbelievably powerful as a soul. Remember, qualitatively equal to God. We have so much power. It's just all hidden, covered over by this nonsense material persona. Oh, good. You are unique. There is nothing wrong with expressing your uniqueness. This is what I talked about at the beginning. Because that is essentially the source of our perfection. Here's a little exercise. You put your hands together and then cross the big finger. Cross the big finger, right? Now, open up the first finger. Open up the little finger. Now try and open up the ring finger. Right? Maybe someone can do it. You look, you did it a little bit. So it's like a uniqueness test. So, ordinary, unique. But there's many other ways we can show our uniqueness. We're all very, very unique. And that's beautiful. Acceptance. According to the great law of attraction, One of the essential ingredients for attracting what we want is to first appreciate all of which we have now. That's the beginning stage, right? We have to learn to appreciate and have gratitude now for what we have. If we want to change our situation and create something better, we have to start from the point of having gratitude right now for the blessings that we have. We have so many blessings to be thankful for. So many. So therefore, keep a journal. Express your gratitude for what is good in your life by keeping a journal or talking to friends. The more you can focus on what is right, the less chance your mind will wander into the caverns of despair and negativity. So I have a practice every day that in the morning or evening when I'm taking a shower, I just take a moment. So like it's a private moment. Shower, it's nice and warm, no one around. I just start thinking, what am I thankful for today? Oh, I'm very thankful for this, I'm very thankful for that. So I'll just go through like maybe 20, 30 things, and I'll say, you know, give thanks for that, whatever that is. Just take a moment, a couple of minutes a day, make it a habit. Oh, I'm so thankful for this hot shower. Oh, I'm so thankful for this house. Oh, I'm so thankful for the nice food. I'm so thankful for that person today who helped me. I'm so thankful for this person, that person. Do this as a meditation every single day. It's very, very empowering and very, very healthy for your consciousness. Do not be distracted. Do not be distracted by negative thoughts of failure or foolish notions that failure or poverty is your lot in life. God, Krishna, wants us all to be successful. Sometimes this is a problem in Krishna consciousness, and this is particularly so with devotees that have gone through the Brahmachari ashram, right? Where we're trained, Jai Shishigani Tai, we're trained to have a type of poverty consciousness where we're not meant to accumulate things, we're not meant to keep many possessions. I know when I was a brahmachari, literally everything could fit in one tiny little cupboard, little bag. I mean, I had hardly anything. My biggest possession was a computer, and that was it. And other than that, I didn't even have a watch, nothing. So the problem with that is that you can tend to take that poverty, that consciousness, into your life as you become a grihastha, and you think, oh, I'm not meant to accumulate anything. But the fact is, if you have a family, you need to pay bills, you need to, you know, feed your family, there's many material responsibilities. So don't be afraid to have a prosperity consciousness and think, you know what, I want lots of things to use in Krishna's service. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course, it's bad if you get attached. And if you get distracted and think that somehow or other you are the controller and owner of these things, but it is okay to want to have things to use in Krishna's service. There's nothing wrong with that. Prabhupada on the law of attraction. So there's a famous story where Prabhupada was sitting on a park bench in New York and he was talking to a man, a stranger, and he didn't have anything at the time. This is pre-ISKCON. And he said to this man, he says, I can see that I have many temples and followers, but time is separating. This is in 1965, like really, really early. Prabhupada had nothing. And the man asked him, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing in America? And Prabhupada replied like this. It's in the Lilamrita. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially this is what he said, that, oh, I have temples, I have this, I have followers. But time is separating. So Prabhupada actually followed this principle of the law of attraction. He understood that envisioning and having hope and expecting the mercy of God was the proper thing to do. So he actually envisioned a big organization and wonderful things, and of course it happened. So Queen Kunti, however, we have to be careful not to fall into the trap of desiring material things simply for materialism. So Lord, Queen Kunti is famous for saying, "O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anything or anyone else." That's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So ultimately a devotee's desire or real motivation is to desire things that will bring him or her closer to Krishna. So even if a devotee desires, for example, "Oh, I want a big temple," or "I want, you know, this or that," it's the motivation is to serve Krishna better. That always has to be there. So the affirmation for this truth: I embrace my perfection and the core essence of my being. I love myself unconditionally. Self meaning the soul. I accept everything about me as perfect. I am perfect. So that's it. Oh, we're lost. And that is the geometric signature for the words "I am perfect." It's a really bad connection, huh? Yay. Truth number four. I am Prasadam. Yay! I had to make this, had to include this one. Right? But of course I'm explaining the meaning here. There's a deeper meaning to Prasadam. So the Hindu concept of Prasadam is synonymous with grace or mercy, or that which is unconditionally manifest by divine providence. By definition, therefore, we too must be Prasadam, for our very manifestation was an act of unconditional love. So we are also Prasadam. We're by the mercy of others. This is how we are, right? That's Prasadam. So Prasadam is also sanctified plant-based food that has been offered in devotion to God or the goddess. The qualities of God. So God is everything that denotes a supreme personality, including the capability and desire to engage in a variety of loving relationships, to enjoy fun and exciting activities, and do whatever is necessary to expand and heighten such bliss. God is the supreme enjoyer. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Right? What's the Sanskrit for supreme enjoyer? Purusha? No, Mahapurusha. Wouldn't it be? The great enjoyer? Krishna is the great enjoyer. And so therefore, if we're qualitatively equal to Krishna, what's that mean? We're also enjoyers? Prabhupada one time was asked by a reporter, "What is the purpose of life?" Prabhupada says, "To enjoy." He's like, "What?" And then he explained. But his first response was to enjoy. Because the soul is pleasure seeking. The soul is pleasure seeking. That's our nature. We want to enjoy. The problem is we're enjoying in the wrong way. We're trying to enjoy through the body. We're trying to enjoy the material elements. But the nature to enjoy is natural. Right? To enjoy, we just have to learn how to enjoy. And of course, the best way to the perfection of enjoyment is when you enjoy in service to Krishna. The mercy of others, everything that we currently possess and every facet of who we are today is due at least in part to the mercy of someone else. There is no such thing as individual success. This is the fact. Right? Sometimes people get glorified, "Oh, he was an overnight, she was an overnight success." As if, you know, that person did everything and no one else helped them. That's complete nonsense. That person had literally, in most cases, hundreds of people helping them in some way along their path to success. In the same way, all of us are made up of the mercy of others. Someone in the past has helped us in some way or other to bring us to this point, whether that's material, physical things, or even subtle things, where we have a certain mindset, we have a certain thought pattern, a certain way of perceiving the world, because of the influence of one of our mentors in the past, who said, oh no, don't think like that, think like this. So in so many ways, we are the product of the mercy of others. Sympathy and empathy. To empathize is to understand and share the feelings of another. So you just share the feelings. To sympathize, however, is to to agree and practically express your affection. Sympathy and empathy are a natural expression of a heart filled with love. In other words, they are natural to the soul. So it's natural for the soul to have empathy, to sympathize, to care, to love, to want to help others. This is our nature. And the fact that we've forgotten that, and that, you know, the material world today, material societies today, are geared towards destroying others. This is the mentality of material consciousness. It's like to destroy, to bring others down, right? Like, I need to push you down in order for me to go up. This is material consciousness. Whereas in the spiritual consciousness, the whole mentality is, how can I serve you? How can I help you? So the gopis are always pushing the other gopis towards Krishna. That's the stark difference between spiritual consciousness, the spiritual world, and the material world. Completely opposite. Selflessness. Selflessness, by definition, is best expressed in that maternal relation, in a maternal relationship. However, somewhat fortuitously, a mother naturally learns how to love unconditionally from the child. It is said in India, a child gives birth to a mother. Right? So we often see it the other way. Oh, you know, I made this child, you know. I birthed this child. But actually it's because of the child that you're a mother now. It's because of the child that you're a father. Without the child, you're not a father. Right? So this is interesting. Blessings of others. To bless someone is to intentionally desire good on their behalf, or to direct the flow of universal love that embraces all of us towards another person. Of course, the best way to express that love, or one of them, is sharing prasadam. And earlier on I gave you the 6 practical expressions of namaste. So in the Nectar of Instruction, it's described that these are the 6 ways that a devotee exchanges love with another person. Right? Hearing with empathy, with an open heart, expressing yourself with an open heart, giving prasadam with an open heart and love, accepting prasadam, being willing to accept with love, and then giving a gift unconditionally and willing to accept a gift unconditionally. These are the 6 ways we practically express this love. Association of devotees. It is said that the only auspicious thing in this universe is the association of a saintly person, specifically a genuine devotee of God. And I mentioned this in the class the other day. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Ramananda Roy, he asked him many things. You know, what is the most pious thing? What is the best ashram? I mean, all sorts of things. Everything you can imagine he asked. And one of the questions he asked was, what is the most auspicious thing in this world? And Ramananda Roy said, the only auspicious thing is association with Krishna's devotees. That's such a powerful statement if you think about it. It's the only auspicious thing. In other words, everything else is inauspicious, because everything else in some way or other is entangling us in this material world, and therefore inauspicious. So the only auspicious thing is association with Krishna's devotees, because from that everything else comes. Everything else auspicious will come. you will get the holy name, you will get prasadam, you'll get spiritual wisdom, right? All of these things will come. And of course we can associate with Prabhupada through his books, right? There's Vani and Vapu, right? So the most important is the instructions of the Guru, not the physical presence. So even though Prabhupada's physically not with us, we can get his association, we can associate with him directly through his books, through his words. That's the power of transcendental knowledge. Service. Service is the very essence of our existence. We can't escape it, nor do we want to. For service defines us, enriches us, heals our souls, satisfies our minds, and completes all relationships. Isn't this? Without service, there can't be relationship. Without service, there can't be happiness. We all have this experience, like Christmas is coming up, right? We've all, most of us have celebrated Christmas in the past, right? Isn't it the fact that you get more pleasure giving presents than receiving presents? Right? You can't wait for someone to open up the present that you bought them. Are you just anticipating or anxious? You want to see their smile on their face, the happiness, when they see that gift that you gave them with love. That's the nature as soul, is that we prefer to serve. We're actually happier when we serve others. That's our nature. Five types of service. The Vaishnava scriptures of India describe that the soul can have one of five loving relationships with God. You can have a neutral loving relationship. You can have a service relationship, like as a servant. You can have a friendly relationship, because friends also serve. You can have a parental relationship. Parents serve the children. And you can have a conjugal, a more intimate relationship. All of these relationships are possible in the service of God. These statements should not surprise us, because whatever is present in this material world must have a pure source in the spiritual realm, just like the reflection of our image in a mirror. Everything has an essence, a source. Whatever we feel here, whatever we see here, experience here, is coming from the spiritual world. It's just that here it is somewhat contaminated or perverted. But everything has an essence. Nothing is here can exist without a spiritual analog. Affirmation. Repeat. Everything I am today is due to the mercy of others. I am open to continue receiving the mercy and love of others. I offer mercy back to the world through acts of unconditional kindness. I am prasadam. So the last truth is, I am prosperous. Thoughts are things that permeate and feed the creation of the world around us. Right? Thoughts are literally things. They're not just, you know, ethereal. They're actually things that have their seeds. An apparent law of attraction seems to underlie every single action and reaction in this universe. As you think, you are literally laying down the building blocks or writing the screenplay of your reality. You deserve the best. The Vedas declare that you, the soul, are qualitatively equal in all respects to God. Naturally, therefore, you and I deserve the very best the universe has to offer. We are equal. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. This equal vision is critical in our quest to become spiritually evolved. The more we see distinction and think that, you know, somehow or other, you know, someone is better than, I'm better than someone, the more we remain entrapped in mature consciousness. Although materially we may be very different, we may have very, very different circumstances, essentially as soul, we are equal. And therefore, that's why in our program, Food for Life Global, the key message that I try to convey to the world is not feeding the hungry, no. It's uniting the world through pure food. Because we try to teach them that we're not simply serving regular food here. This is food which is empowered with love. And therefore, when you eat this food, it is communicating the message that you are my sister. You are my brother. I care about you. And this is a practical manifestation of that care, that empathy, that love. Right? We talk about practical namaste. When I give you food, it's like I'm communicating. Food communicates all languages. What to speak of prasadam? But any ordinary food has the power to communicate. Food is a very powerful transporter of intention. So prasadam is even more powerful. Right? So therefore, we make this clear in our communications at Food for Life, that the purpose of Food for Life is creating unity in the world through practically sharing this pure loving food. And therefore, if there's a sense of unity, spiritual unity, then all the problems disappear. Hunger will disappear. How can you possibly tolerate hunger or someone going hungry if you really saw them as your brother and sister, as a soul? You wouldn't tolerate it. So we're directly addressing the root cause of hunger, which is spiritual inequality, through this action of sharing food indiscriminately. So we're all equals. Respect. A truly learned person is aware of this presence and is therefore respectful and compassionate to all living beings. So this is a poster put up by an organization called Mercy for Animals. Why love one but eat the other? Because one isn't full of delicious bacon. You know, that's the thing. That's what the materialists say. You know, they discriminate. Oh, I love my dog, but I eat cows. This is foolishness. The rain does not discriminate. When mercy descends, it is often just like rain, indiscriminate. In other words, you and I are just as worthy as the next person for some unexpected drop of good fortune. Who has experienced some magical drop of mercy when they're doing sankirtan? I know I have, where I'm distributing books or, you know, doing some other service. I'm intensely focused on, you know, pleasing Krishna, and it's like frustrating, and you don't feel like you're making progress, but you just keep trying and you keep trying, and when you least expect it, something magical happens. So sometimes I would I'd find someone to preach to, and it's like someone came up to me, and I've got a book, and they're very enthusiastic, and they're asking questions, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I got a real buck to hear, and I'm giving them all of the philosophy and all of the right things to say, and they're just taking it in, and at the end they don't take the book. They don't take the book. It's just all show. It's like, you know, it's just pretend. They don't really have the intention to take the book. They're just entertaining you. And then other times, you'll run into someone that doesn't look qualified at all. Maybe a homeless person, and yet they have so much enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. So you can never tell what is happening inside as a soul. So we tend to make that mistake sometime and judge people externally. So mercy doesn't have any discrimination. It's indiscriminate. And it can happen anywhere at any time. We are heirs to the throne. Even if a wealthy father bequeaths, in other words, gifts, his entire wealth to his son or daughter, if that son or daughter is in ignorance of his father's wealth, he may not act appropriately or inherit the good fortune. This is their examples of this, where some child didn't realize that their mother or father was wealthy, and so that because of this lack of awareness, they miss out on the fortune. You know, maybe they left, they went away as a teenager, and they never saw their parents again until their parents died. Meanwhile, their parents just made hundreds of millions of dollars through the internet or something, and they didn't know. And then they don't get access to that fortune, which they deserve as being the children, but it happens. So such is the predicament of most people today. They are totally unaware of their divine heritage as a child of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada, in this context, one time he wrote a letter to the temple presidents, and he says we should have 20 preparations available all the time for people that come to the temple to feed them. Puris, halava, samosas, many things. So when someone comes, immediately we serve them, and when it runs out, we make more. I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially said like this. He wrote a letter to all the temple presidents in 1977. This is one of his last instructions. He says, there should be no question of want. Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Where is there a question of want? In other words, where is there a question of a lack of wealth? Krishna is the husband of Lakshmi. Hello? Right? So whatever we need, Krishna will supply. And then at the end of this statement, it was a long letter, he says, invite the world, we can feed them. Invite the world. So that was Prabhupada's attitude. That, you know, he felt that because he's the son of Krishna, he had unlimited capacity to do amazing things. He had that much confidence and Krishna would supply him. If he just desired and he worked hard, Krishna would supply and help him. Prosperity consciousness. This law says that whatever you expect with confidence, positive or negative, becomes your reality. If you confidently expect to succeed, if you confidently expect to learn something from every experience, if you confidently expect to become wealthy as a result of applying your talents and abilities to your opportunities, and you maintain that attitude of confident expectations long enough, it will become your reality. Self-satisfaction. One of the keys to happiness is learning to be content with your own company. As long as you believe that satisfaction and love are something that you must find outside of you, you will never be truly satisfied. So we have to be self-satisfied and understand that Krishna is always with us. He's always in our heart. He is our true lover. He is the person that truly cares about us, always. Forever, then we can be satisfied. But if we think that we can only find satisfaction or love in an external way, in the material world, we are fooling ourselves. Affirmation. Repeat after me. I am a child of the supreme opulent.
I am a child of the supreme opulent.
I embrace my godliness.
I embrace my godliness.
And believe that I deserve the best.
I allow myself to receive all good
things.
Why not?
Is there a problem with that? There should not be. We should be willing, yes, bring all these good things and I'll use them for Krishna. That's the difference. We're not promoting some mature consciousness. We want to use everything in Krishna's service. Prabhupada would even say, there's even a quote, one time Prabhupada says, we use everything in Krishna's service. Missiles. He said missiles. Missiles in Krishna's service. That was his attitude. Nothing was off the table. Everything can be used in Krishna's service. You look at the example of Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield, right? Arjuna's in this world war. This is not a petty quarrel in a village. This is a world war. This is with angry, powerful soldiers with mystic powers. Millions of them, ready to kill each other, with all these amazing weaponry. And what did Krishna tell Arjuna? Fight. He didn't tell him to run and go and meditate in the cave, because that's what Arjuna wanted to do. He says, you fight, you're a soldier, that is your nature. Therefore you engage your nature in my service. So that is the most radical example of Yukta Vairagya, of engaging things in Krishna's service. You can't get more radical than a war. Right? So Krishna gave that example to drive the point home. Anything that you have, any skills you have, any facility you have, use it in his service. Nothing is off the table. Everything can be used. In fact, even the other day we read, Nanda Prabhu was reading from, oh no, it was Prabhupada's lecture. He says in the Vedic culture, there were prostitutes. And they were devotees of Krishna. They were using their prostitution in Krishna's service. It's crazy. In other words, they're using, there is a certain class of men that wanted to enjoy in this way. So prostitutes would help to keep society peaceful by providing that service. As Prabhupada says, these are also devotees of Krishna, but they were prostitutes. That was their function. It's crazy. But there's nothing that cannot be used in Krishna's service. Everything has a pure purpose. And that is the art of preaching. That is the art of Krishna consciousness. That's exactly what Prabhupada tried to teach us through his own example. I am prosperous. So these yantra meditations, I want to explain that, just a couple of slides. A yantra is neither magic nor a technique to involve magic. Rather, in technical terms, a yantra means an instrument, an apparatus, a talisman, or mystical diagram, or mystical software that encapsulates energetic vibrations. That's what a yantra is. It's like mystical software that encapsulates vibrations. That's a yantra. So symbols. I'll give you an example of this, of how this, you know, the basis of this idea. Factually, the number 7 is just 2 strokes of a pen. Right? But when we see that symbol, it reminds us of lucky 7, 7 days of the week, 7 major planets, or maybe something else important in our life that happened on the 7th day of the month. In other words, the symbol associated with 7 effectively contains a whole database of information. Right? The same with the number 2. Right? If you think of the number 2, numerologically, number 2 astrologically, it represents the moon. Number 2 also represents equality. It represents peace and harmony, right? 2. Many things. In gemology, it represents silver or pearls. Everything has a correlation. Every number has a correlation to physical things, to colors, to gems, to astronomy. There's all these different relationships. So these numbers are literally just symbols, but they contain information. And so when I look at someone's numerological chart, I do numerology, I can bring out information that is contained in those numbers. So the purpose of yantras, different yantras are connected with the different deities or angels, as well as other specific mantras. The 5 gross elements of nature, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, are also connected to yantras. And by performing specific rituals, utilizing the appropriate yantras, it is said that you can control nature. So this is what happens in yajnas. It's like this is basically this process of controlling nature using yantras. And we can even see this in deity worship, right? How we're connecting with these energies. Like when the pujari is offering the lamp, he's offering fire, and then he offers water, and then he offers earth. Right? The incense is earth. Did you know that? It's representing earth when you offer incense. Earth, water, fire. It's all in the same, in the right order. Earth, water, fire, air. He's offering the chamara, or the peacock fan. And the ether is the bell, When you're doing the mantra and you're ringing the bell, that represents ether. So there's all these correlations. So yantras are a technique of actually capturing that information in a very simplistic, efficient form. That's what a yantra is. Your soul yantra. This is something that I do privately. I actually create yantra that's based on your birthday or your name. It's like a geometric signature of you. And this is some examples of people, their name and birthday in yantra based on the magic square of the sun. And as I said, I do numerology readings, and that's how you can contact me. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.